Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
Yep, I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on the 15th.
15th, two more days.
Of October, two more days before the nothing really happens.
Exactly. Two more days of agony until they do something that postpones something so we have more agony in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll probably do something like some sort of a resolution to keep things going until January so they can milk this for another couple months.
I mean, it's pretty interesting.
Get us through Christmas.
Exactly. Oh, we can't spoil Christmas or Hanukkah for that matter. You know, one of the things that I found that really interesting is that they're really digging in pretty good here. They keep coming back with this. Both sides keep coming back with the same thing over and over, maybe hoping to wear down the other side. I don't know. But they're not happy.
Yeah, it's pretty dumb.
Yeah. So I want to mention some of the things that are happening because I think it's fascinating. These trial balloons and stalling tactics. I don't know if you're watching all this that's going on.
A little bit.
So in the mornings, the last few days, you've had markets that have been kind of testy. Because we're getting closer and closer. And the closer we get, by the way, even if they come to some kind of resolution agreement, there's still some damage that's done. So early in the morning, markets are not doing well. And all of a sudden, about 10:30, 11 o'clock or so, yesterday in particular, Monday, President Obama said there's going to be a press conference at 3 o'clock with Joe Biden, and they're going to announce, you know, talk about something. Well, markets said, oh, wow, that's good. Something great. Markets kind of turned around and held all day. Then today, markets start going down pretty good. And again, there's a conference at 3 o'clock or so. Now, I think it's interesting because he canceled the one yesterday because nothing came of it. And I thought it was really interesting that he tried the same tactic today. And why would they pick 3 o'clock or 3:30 in the afternoon?
I have no idea. It doesn't interfere with any of the shows they watch, so I guess it's probably the reason.
I think it's all about before the market closes and you can keep the market like with a little carrot in front of it for a while to make sure that it doesn't implode during the day.
I have a hard time believing they're that savvy.
I think they are. Maybe they're not that savvy. How about they're that scared?
Well, that's possible.
It was I've always thought this, but one of the things that really implanted this was over the weekend, Senator Schumer, he said – wow, I'm really nervous about Sunday night. We don't know what the markets will react to this, he says. You can't say no sooner than next Thursday. I worry on Monday what that the market's going to open. Maybe because of the vote, they're still worrying. Then not only will the stock market go down, but the interest rates will go up and the value of the U.S. Treasury has declined. It's very serious. I mean, this is what these guys are thinking. I'm certain in this meeting, and they're talking about, okay, listen, we have a certain amount of time until the markets open on a certain day, and we really need to get something done here before that so we can announce to the markets. Huh. They're all, you know.
They're all in the market. These guys are all insider traders. Yep. You know, they have these laws they've passed, so they can't really, they have to report what they do, but they can do anything they want based on what legislation they got coming up. And the information is kept in a locked box in some basement. They won't even put it online.
Yeah, I find it to be beyond distasteful. I find it to be a very bad precedent that they've set. And this all really started back in 2008 with the Treasury when they were doing this and they were throwing out trial balloons and trying to keep the markets up. And as a matter of fact, it's been chronicled that when certain things were said, they would monitor how much the market would move on that to figure out if that's something they should continue with.
Well, I'm sure they used that occasionally to manipulate the market. Why not?
Yep,
They can legally do it, so it's not a big deal.
Isn't that great? You could legally do whatever you want if you make the laws?
Yeah.
How great is that?
Yeah, it's hard to beat.
Now, the headline that really kind of spooked the markets this afternoon, late in the day, was that the United States AAA rating may be cut by Fitch. This would be a first. It was only one other ratings company that cut the U.S. before, and we know what happened there. It was pretty ugly.
Yeah.
Right after them. And they are currently on ratings watch and warning. For a rating. I don't know if this is kind of like a shaking their finger at it or whatever it is. But the end of the day, here's the deal. So supposedly this 17th of October has been all of the news of the day that we run out of money, right? Just the tap turns off. The truth is there's enough money to last somewhere between, it's not much better, but 22nd through maybe the first week of November without any further borrowing to pay the current things. And then more things have to shut down, more things have to shut down, you know, and it goes on.
This is not the way it's, you know, other people are explaining it, that we have enough money coming in to the Treasury on a day-to-day basis that it covers all of our interest and principal payments.
That's not true. Why do we keep borrowing then?
Well, because we keep making the budget bigger. We borrow for what? I mean, the budget, this year's budget that they're talking about cutting back, they're not ever talking about cutting back the budget. They're cutting back, they're talking about cutting back the increases.
Increases, right. It's pretty funny.
No, but, it is pretty funny. And the increases are why we have to keep borrowing money, because they keep making it bigger.
But there is not enough money to pay all of the debt service and all of the, you know, it's a giant Ponzi scheme that's going on here. I mean, I'm not trying to be, you know, come up with some bizarre conspiracy. There is. It's a Ponzi scheme or whatever you want to call it, whereas money coming in goes to the people that it has to be paid to. So it comes in, it goes out. It comes in, it goes out. And they're leveraging it up because they need more money to make this happen. And they do need to borrow, and that's why the government is shut down, by the way, is because there's no budget. And there's no budget, then there's no money. If there's no money, then you can't pay things. So it depends on how long this whole thing goes. And if there was enough money, here's what you have to say to the people that said there's enough money to run things. If there is enough money, why do we have to raise the debt ceiling?
Because they have to make the budget bigger.
But the budget is the budget. There are expenses now. If you don't change anything right now, they still don't have enough money without borrowing.
That's not the way I understand it.
Well, I'm just saying, if there is no increase in the debt ceiling, which is the big issue right now, and there's, let's say there's no new budget passed, you know, or there hasn't been a budget anyway, there's no changes in expenses right now, what would cause the problem if they had enough money coming in?
They say nothing. There won't be a problem.
Who is they? Because they're idiots. No,
I'm telling you, the people that have looked this over, mostly the Republicans, the Democrats are in denial about it, and they won't sign off on anything. The budget's been written up. There is a budget there that the Democrats just have to, or Obama just has to sign it, and the Senate has to just approve it. It's been done. It's not as though they're not doing anything.
There's a lot of cuts.
There's really only one cut. They were going to defund the Affordable Care Act.
Right. Well, that's
which has been
done
before. Well, yeah, it must be a lot of money because apparently that website that doesn't work, it cost the U.S. taxpayer $600 million to develop.
Nice. Very nice. Well, they probably have one little server sitting. They probably have the old Twitter server. They'll probably get a whale there every once in a while on the screen. But no, there's just there is not enough money to fund moving forward. We have a net deficit where we have to be borrowing on a regular basis. And again, whether I think I read the piece from the Congressional Budget Office. That's when that's where I found out where the dates were, where they were moving. But I mean, I guess we could all argue this, but why wouldn't the Republicans say, hey, guys, there's no problem. We're not going to shut down. I mean, we're not going to reach the debt ceiling. We're not going to have a problem because we don't have to borrow. But
the Republicans are in this is along with the Democrats. They're the ones that have all these. They're adding programs, too. I mean, both sides do it. I mean, right. The Republicans are the ones that kind of pretend they're, oh, we're all for saving money and cutting the deficit. And I don't see any evidence of this. I mean, when George Bush was in, he's the one who really racked it up with these expensive wars.
Well, not only the wars, more important with Bush was that he implemented significant tax cuts to continue to stimulate the economy. And those tax cuts were a big part of what ate into all of the money that was amassed by, you know, the U.S. during the Clinton administration. Those tax cuts continued on, and then they extended them for a while, remember? Because the economy wasn't ready. This is one of the things you never do. You never make a deal where someday in the future you have to then turn around and reverse it without knowledge of what is going to be in the future. It never works. But it's good for the moment. So you say, hey, we got a great tax cut. And what we're going to do is we're going to raise taxes in 5 years from now, when I'm out of office, by the way. And it's not going to hurt anybody because we're going to be so successful in in the economy right now, we're going to have all this growth that the tax increase won't hurt. And if we don't do it, we have a big problem, but it's not going to be that. So they map it all out utilizing all these pro formas and utilizing the expectations. But if those expectations don't come to reality, which they did not, there's a bigger problem on the on this, in that you're not going to have enough money to bring in, and it's going to be double problems.
You know, it would be help. It would be useful if they would cut spending. They don't do it. Either side, neither side does this. There has been no spending cuts. I mean, they put they took some money away from the military because they couldn't even come to a conclusion that resulted in this sequestering thing. You know, if there's nobody, everyone talks like you're talking. Oh, geez, we're not getting enough money. We got to tax people more, and this is terrible. And nobody ever talks about cutting spending. They never do, neither side.
The problem is that the idea of cutting spending, everybody always thinks, as soon as you say cutting spending, they start with the education, they start with the elderly, and they start with health care.
That's because they don't want to cut spending. And that's
right, exactly.
You put those things on the block, and then you just wave your arms and say, look what horrible things we're having to do because we have to cut spending. There's a million ways of cutting spending rather than just, you know, defining the weak people in the puzzle and then chopping their heads off. This is nonsense.
Right. Well, the first thing they need to do is go through the entire amount of spending and find out
how about
ridiculous.
The military? How about the Pentagon? They can't even audit the Pentagon. The Pentagon says that we can't be audited because we don't know where our money is.
Nice. No, the whole thing's a mess.
Anyway, let's get back to the market. This is
okay.
This is going to either happen. This. Whatever happens, it'll be interesting to watch.
Yep. Now we talk about the close to the pin competition. Winner for week 7. Which the stock was, I think it was NAV, was Gary N. He had a guess of 36. This is brilliant. This is the third one in a row. They're so close. Gary's was at 36.05, just 0.17% away from the close. You and I came in kind of in the middle. But as a group, the average entry was
didn't do very well.
Huh?
I said, in other words, we didn't do very well this time.
No, not at all. As a group, the average entry was just 0.8% off the actual price. The high price was 39.39, low price of 32 and change. Now, all of this is available. There's a whole chart and tables and information about this over at DH Unplugged. And, of course, you can enter this by simply going over to DH Unplugged and clicking on Close to the Pin Competition. Next week's prize, next week's stock is ExxonMobil. And the following week, we're going to change it up one more time. We're going to use a crazy stock, Soda, S-O-D-A, SodaStream. You know they make the – you know what they do?
Yeah, they make these little bubblers.
How stupid is that?
Well, I mean, people like to make their own seltzer.
All right. So what's involved in that? You add a little carbonation to it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So now you go and you got to get – you go one step further and you make your own soda because I guess you feel like you're saving money or something?
That was the idea. You're supposed to be saving money and it's more healthy because you can get better syrups. I guess.
I don't know
how you can, but I guess you can.
And so SodaStream, it's an Israeli company, actually. They make these soda things, you know, where you can make
seltzer.
Flavored soda, yeah. So anyway, I think it's a novelty, but the company seems to be doing well.
I don't know why anyone
$50
would buy it. It just doesn't make sense to me. Do you have a big can of the CO2, or do you get a little?
I think you use cartridges.
Same cartridges you use the ones you shake? Just buy one of those. They only you can get them, you know, all over the place.
Right. So the prize for that, because it is a very volatile stock. Now that's not this week; it's the week after. It's going to be $50 Amex gift card.
Oh, good.
Stepping it up a little bit.
Good work.
And this week's prize for Gary N is going to be another Trigger Point Research subscription. For the pro package, which is a $179 per month valuation. So I thought that was pretty cool. Gary, thank you so much. Everybody else, just go over to DH Unplugged, put your stuff in. It's going to be, once you hear this, you'll have Exxon available for you. News. I'm seeing a lot of news headlines with, are we going to have another Lehman moment? The next Black Monday?
Yeah, they're pointing the finger at JP Morgan for this Lehman moment.
Well, JP Morgan seems fine. They had an $11 billion potential penalty, and nobody cares.
Right.
I mean, the stock went
nobody
down
cared
a
much
after.
About Lehman either at the moment. I mean, I remember watching them, you know, somebody eviscerating Lehman on CNBC, and everyone was, not a problem. And it went up.
Yeah. You know, one of the people that called the decline and eventual problem with Lehman was Meredith Whitney. She was made very famous by a quote-unquote call that she made that Citibank was going to suspend their dividend and that there was going to be a lot of problems with Citibank, or Citicorp. And it came true, and everybody loved her all of a sudden. And she was, you know, kind of a nice-looking woman. And I think she had a ton of work done since then. If you see the pictures from then and now, it's unbelievable. And she got in the whole media spotlight and all that, and then made terrible call after call after that.
Yeah, don't you love that?
Couldn't get a thing right.
You nail it once.
Yep. It's all you need. It's all you need.
Yeah.
But then what happened was she opened up her mouth and started talking about how we're going to have a record number of municipal failures and bankruptcies. By the way, I would have agreed with that.
Everybody was on board with this. It was going to happen before the end of this year, and we still haven't seen it. And there were some hot shots besides her. I mean, some real hot shots that have been that predicted it. I can't remember the guy's name, but he was one of the major traders in bonds, and he said it's going to be a disaster. And it's going
to
be
over at Bill Gross over at PIMCO, one of those guys, Muhammad Al-Arian?
It was one of those guys. Maybe it was Gross. I'm not sure. But whoever it was, they made a big stink about it. This was like 6 months ago. And the only thing they could say is you'll know it when it happens, and there's going to be more wealth generated from this collapse than anything. Well, it hasn't happened yet. Maybe it's got plenty of time, but these guys are starting to straighten out their act.
If you look at the data behind the rationale behind why that was said to going to be happening, it made total sense.
At the time.
At the time. You had a problem. Municipalities, that the property values went down, and you couldn't collect as much tax on it. There was a lot of vacancies. People were losing their homes. You can't collect tax on those, right? And then there was a need to lay off people, and it just goes on and on and on and on. And then they had to pay the interest rate that they had to pay, and maybe they couldn't refinance because their debt rating went down. And again, but you know what? Once again, the government stepped in, and I'm sure they'll say they made money on this deal, but they started to help out and create liquidity and buy up every bond that was out there. And as interest rates went down, these things looked better and better, especially because they were tax-free. So they were saved by the way we all were, was just a massive amount of money being pumped into the system. So,
well, you were always a bear on the munis.
Mm-hmm.
I think even on our fake trade thing, you've done it a couple times.
Yep.
You've gone into this as a short. What do you think now? Have you changed your mind, or you think it's just going to be
Well, if the logic was so clear back then and it showed that there should be a big decline, there was a decline, but a lot of it came back, of course. The logic now says that, well, housing values have stabilized and more people are working and the economy is better. And, you put it all together, well, you just reverse it and say, well, you know what? Interest rates down and stay low. Well, it's good for them. They did a lot of refinancing and they offered bonds at a lower rate. The problem will come for a different reason entirely if there is a problem. And that will be if bond yields start to move up significantly. And what will happen there is the municipalities won't go bankrupt, of course, because it's not going to affect them with what they have. The problem is going to be that the bond values will go down significantly. Now, if you hold it to maturity, who cares? So if you got a 30-year bond, you hold it to maturity, who cares what it's valued at in between and if they pay off?
Right, that's true.
So it doesn't matter. You just have to suffer through the looking at your statement. That's the only thing. So, I mean, the wisdom and logic right now would say, I think very convincingly, that they're pretty much out of the woods at this point for the most part. Some municipalities may have – I mean, Detroit supposedly went bankrupt.
Yeah, well, Detroit's a hellhole.
Right. But, I mean, there's been a few. I think there was a town in California.
Yeah, we've had a couple. Vallejo was the first one to do it, and then I think it was Stockton or –
And there was one in
Modesto,
like Pennsylvania.
One of these, I don't know. There's something down south, I think.
I don't think that there's that much of a problem right now, although stepping into bonds at this moment may not be, you got to be careful. You got to be careful on the length of the bond. You don't want the short ones, and you want the long, long ones. Right in the center to the left, a little bit shorter is where you want. So, we have earnings season, by the way. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, you say that every show.
Well, earnings season really did kick off with Alcoa last week, and they came out, and everybody was excited about the earnings for about 15 minutes. And then it kind of went down. I mean,
So everyone's carping about the earnings?
Yeah, you know what? I got to tell you, the earnings are not that impressive. First of all, I can't even decipher the bank earnings, so I'm not even going to try. It's impossible to understand what they're doing. And they have so much buried in their footnotes and accounting methodologies, and forget it. The big ones that are starting to come out, this week we're going to see, and we've been seeing, we saw Intel, we saw Yahoo. And once again, we're seeing that investors are just simply buying to buy. They bought Intel off of the number that came out. They bought Yahoo big time when the number came out.
Yeah, but wasn't Yahoo really being bought because of the speculation that the Alibaba, whoever it is, stock out of China, which Yahoo owns a ton of, is going to take the stock up with it?
Well,
it's a one-shot deal, though. That's kind of the...
Right. And Alibaba did have great numbers in terms of when you looked inside the earnings. But the earnings number and the earnings growth, I put a couple of charts up here for you that I made. And I looked at, for example, Intel. Look at that earnings growth. It's awful.
Current earnings growth.
Yeah, this is the year over year. So we look at the quarter, this year.
Except for that one bump, it's no big deal. That's for sure.
And it came from a pretty...
Yahoo's no better.
No, that's what I'm saying. So they bought it. The stock rose up about 6% after the close on the number. And I'm looking at this number. I'm saying, I'm looking at not only the number, I'm looking at some of the details behind it. I'm thinking, what are they buying here? I must be missing something. And sure enough, the stock went from up 6% to flat, or maybe up 0.5% by the end of that session. And Intel, which was up about 3%, ended up being down about 3% by the last look that I had on it. Because while their margins are okay, the earnings is really since, 2010, which is the big spike. You got to kind of like, let's cut out that whole big bump there, right? That was the big trough where you had a negative 50% growth on a quarter, year-over-year basis a few times. So you really kind of sucked it down pretty good there. And then you had that big rise when people start spending a little bit back in, 2010. But if you cut that out, I mean, there's been no growth in Intel for what? Last 8 years?
Closer to 10.
Okay. And yeah, the reason why they had the big growth, by the way, in 2004 was because of the big drop they had in the few years prior to that.
Right.
So I'm not too impressed with these numbers.
No, it's pretty pathetic, actually. Tech is pretty dead. I mean, you can still have a speculation on some small company that has a better widget, and that thing can skyrocket. But once they get to a certain size, and Intel's been at that size for a long time, they don't really have. It's almost like a conglomerate. They're selling this and that, but they don't have any. There's no. You can't. A blockbuster has no effect anymore.
And with Intel in particular, the issue really is that we know that PC sales are slowing to a trickle.
Well,
we saw that,
The growth is reversed.
Yeah.
But it's not – I mean, there's billions of machines being sold commonly, but this is already in the Intel budget, so it doesn't – it's not going to go up. And they don't seem to have the ability to get their chips into little tablets except for the Surface Pro.
How's that selling?
I don't know. You go to one of these, go to a Microsoft store and ask them. They seem to be selling, at the stores at least, they're selling okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then they hired, the interesting news to me is the hiring, Apple's hiring of the woman from Burberry.
Yeah, what's that about? Is it
hipsters?
And so that's what it is? Burberry?
Yeah.
Burberry's hipsters?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't Burberry kind of like...
No. She fixed it. Now it's hipsters.
Ah. Hipsters. High-priced hipsters.
Oh, yeah.
You're very high-priced hipsters.
I'm doing a little piece for the new domain on this particular thing, and I'm isolating these stores and these places that sell to hipsters. Not the hipsters that... Most hipsters shop at the Goodwill. I mean, let's be realistic here.
Uh-huh.
But the styling, rich hipsters, and there's plenty of them, they open bars and restaurants, and they're all over the place. They buy from these high-end joints, and Burberry is one of them. And Burberry's and hipsters is very – if you look it up, look up Burberry hipster, and you'll find page after page on Google about this phenomenon. And so I believe that they brought her over. And by the way, this makes zero sense. Why would you, as a why would you give up a CEO position in a major, you know, company like Burberry, which is big, and go to become the manager of the retail operation at Apple? Is this something you'd do?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not sure if it's.
I think she's getting like $25 million a year at Burberry's.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And then what's she getting over at Apple?
Well, she's going to have to get at least that much.
Wow, that's a pretty good salary or a bonus or.
I don't know how
images for Burberry hipster. This is a, what's the hipster? Hipster is what? A 20-something year old?
They're all millennials. They're between, I think somebody can correct me on this, but to me, they tend to be in their mid-20s. And they're maybe 19 to 29, that kind of a range. Maybe a little. There are older hipsters that are that have kind of moved because they were old when they started being a hipster, and now they're going into their 30s. But it's a style more than anything else. And Burberry is the style. It's a kind of plaid.
It looks rather. I got to tell you something. This look is so. Off-putting.
Yeah, yeah.
It
to
looks like
you.
It looks
not
like,
to another hipster.
Well, of course. I mean, you know, I mean, a lion likes another lion.
This may be the reason. I mean, this may be the off-putting thing. We're looking at a 40-year cycle here. Carnaby Street in London is, again, a hot spot because it appeals to hipsters. And this was the same thing that took place in the late 60s.
What do you need to be a hipster? You just have to wear expensive clothing or stuff that looks expensive and that is tight and kind of...
Goofy looking.
Goofy, yeah, a little. I mean,
and big, giant frame glasses. The glass frames are huge, usually.
I have those.
Well, that would be you. And yeah. Some of the cool guys would have wood frame glasses.
Oh. There's stuff that doesn't match. You do it
a lot of stuff that doesn't match to you.
To me.
But to a hipster, it matches.
A lot of women. There's like mostly women hipsters on the site that I'm looking for.
Well, that's because that's the site you gravitated toward. I don't think that's...
I got to look at another thing
just
here.
Go to images on Google and type in hipster and you'll get a clue. But anyway, so I'm thinking that Apple, she's going to run the stores, but I bet you... I think the stores are... Maybe, I could be wrong, but I think the stores, at least to the powers that be at Apple, are getting stale.
Mm. So what are they going to do? They're going to put the plaid on the walls?
Yeah, plaid.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, that's my guess. Something
what,
like that.
What can you possibly do? They're going to have, like,
I think that, see, the Apple stuff, now that I think about it more and more, it's really hipster. It's already, the hipsters are all over it. They
this
have
is plaid,
to have
plaid, construction, and beard. This is hipster beards. This is like some of those the music groups, it looks like, that are on late night TV.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that.
You got ugly looking. You got tattoos.
Oh yeah, bad looking beards.
Bad looking beards, like something's growing in them, kind of thing.
To you.
And what's with the to you? What's with the to you?
Well, because you're not a hipster.
Okay.
So you make these negative comments, when in fact, if you were a hipster, say, "Oh, these are cool looking."
All right, unkempt beard. Okay, and whether you like that or not, oh, this car, I think it's Carnaby Street right there.
There you go.
Yeah.
So anyway, so they brought her over to Apple for some reason or other to run the stores. I don't know why she took this job. So I went and looked at did some due diligence on the woman. She is she gave a speech to TEDx Hollywood, and mm-hmm. she was a wreck up there. She was a terrible public speaker. I'll just say it. I mean, you'd think she was and she apologized for being a terrible public speaker. She was a nervous wreck. She obviously doesn't like public speaking. She's probably good in boardrooms, but that's different. And I thought she was not presentable. And if Apple likes to have all their people come out and talk about stuff, I don't know how she's going to manage that. And again, the step down from CEO to vice president of retail sales just doesn't make sense to me unless she was on the, you know, going to get fired or something screwy was going on. I have no idea.
She was president of how do you say her last name? Arendts?
I can't. Arendts or something like that.
She was president of Donna Karan International, executive vice president of Liz Claiborne, and now CEO of Burberry. So those are all, we'll call them retail establishments, clothing. And now, I don't get it. Maybe they're going to. Maybe it's all about a wearable thing that Apple's coming out with.
Well, that's a good speculation. I like that speculation as a possibility. They have been talking about wearables. talking about the watch and some other things, which, of course, the watch came out from Samsung was a piece of crap. Nobody wants, but, you know, it's still a watch. So the wearables are a big topic of conversation, everybody except for me. I think it's idiotic to be wearing a bunch of this stuff. But that's okay. Everybody else likes it. And maybe this got something to do with that, or they're going to roll out of the Apple store at the Cupertino headquarters has lots of clothes. None of the Apple stores have clothes. This store has lots of clothes. I mean, you could go, it's like an REI almost. It's got this lots of, this is like a lot of clothes that for sale. And I don't know what the point of it is, but maybe they're going to do something like that. I have no idea. But it's very suspicious.
I'd like to say the Daily Tech starts out by saying that Apple has announced this new, you know, this new hire, and she'll be the senior vice president of retail and online stores. She'll report directly to CEO Cook, and she's all happy about it. But what they're saying here is just to let you know that if you are a true hipster, you own and use an iPhone. That's another one of the things I guess is important to have.
Yeah, this is true. All hipsters have iPhones.
So they said, is there another name for this called poser, by the way? There's kind of the word poser is all over the place here. Shav. Shav. Something about Shav.
Anyway, keeping up with the hipsters, and it may be just the fact that she has managed, she turned Burberry's into an old lady's store to something that the millennials are going after, which is very, very difficult to do. They're not an easy sell. You can't just, you know, say, let's market to them. You can't do it. They have, I don't know why, but you can't.
Oh, it's either
but she did.
Yeah. That's pretty amazing. Do you want anything Burberry?
Do I own anything Burberry? No, yeah. I can't afford that stuff.
Yeah. A pair of pants, $500.
Target. Go to Target. That's your hipster's place to save money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where we go. Now, Twitter is came out with an announcement that they are planning on listing on the New York Stock Exchange. And the NASDAQ was hoping to get them actually on that. NASDAQ was down about 2% after hours after they didn't get the listing. Now, of course, many companies, they list on one exchange, but they get cross-exchange exposure because of all the different. For example, pre-market, you're not going to buy in the New York, but you could probably buy this pre-market on another exchange, and it just, you know, works in there.
Yeah.
But the New York, it used to be a lot different. You know, the New York was, for a long time, the last of the true auction markets. We had people, like, you know, holding up their hand, they're buying and all that, and everything has gone to electronic. As a matter of fact, I believe that the only stock exchange in the world that is at least partially auction-based is the New York now. Everything else is electronic. Mm. You can't go. There's no exchange anywhere else to go.
Yeah, well, it's just the way it's. We saw that coming years ago.
Yeah. So New York is a hybrid, of course, and the reason it still is that is because a lot of people make a lot of money doing what they do on the floor, and they have their various, you know, people in the runners and the various market makers in that area to keep things, you know, running right. And so I don't know why they picked New York. I guess the idea is it's a lot more prestigious to be on the New York because you can, the listing requirements for some of the sub. Markets and NASDAQ and all that is a lot less than New York. It's a little more stringent to be on the New York, and it looks better if you can make it there. At least that's how it used to be.
Yeah, it's kind of old-fashioned thinking.
Mm-hmm. You know, by the way, do you know? You know, the original name for the markets, they used to call it the curb. The curb. You know where that came from?
No, where? It's because they used to sell outside on the street, on the curb?
It used to be outside on the curb, and there was a little auction that went on in front of some areas in, I think it was the American Stock Exchange. At first it was in front of, and they had this kind of auction process, and it was on the curb, and that's what they would call it, the curb. A little unexciting and uninformative piece of information for you.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, that's about it. Have you have
Jim Rogers, let's talk about him.
You want to do the one above it, huh?
I don't know.
We don't have to. I just thought it was kind of funny. It was, you know, just how quickly things catch on and how crazy people get with it. But we could talk about it another time. I just want to know what the pay-per-click was on YouTube if somebody put a video up.
You really can't find out if there's a standardized number. Everybody gets different amounts of money. They just give you money. And then you might get gypped. Who knows? I don't know.
I mean, because if you have a million downloads and there's a penny, per, I mean, pennies, not a lot, right?
Well, a million pennies is something.
No, no, of course. But a penny is not a lot of money. So a million pennies, what, $100,000? That's pretty good.
No, no, no. It's $10,000.
It's $10,000. Yeah, $10,000 for a penny.
Yeah.
So if you're getting a penny per click, you get $10,000. That's not a lot of money.
Assuming you're getting a click. I mean, just going and watching the video isn't the same as a click. You got to click on something.
No, I don't think so. You get paid for people watching your video because there's ads that come on. You think they have to click the ad?
Oh, maybe. You mean the ones with pre-roll. Yeah, it's possible. You might get a penny.
Yeah, everybody's doing pre-roll now. You can't even see a video on YouTube anymore without a pre-roll.
Yeah.
You can have the stupidest video with like 5 views and it's got a pre-roll.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's annoying.
Well, the guy gets 5 cents.
Mm-hmm. That he won't declare. Jim Rogers did an interview for Barron's over, I guess, last weekend. And Jim Rogers is a guy, very interesting guy. He's a
Chicken Little of the stock market scene.
He wears a bow tie. That's just
and he wears
a
bow tie. That tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah. I've always been fascinated about a number of things. When was the first person that looked at an oyster and said, let's eat that? You know,
the guy
like
was
that.
Hungry.
Yeah. And when was the first time that you as an individual decided I'm a bow tie kind of guy? And then do you have the choice of not wearing the bow tie ever because your whole entire image goes?
If you start wearing a bow tie, I mean, it used to be in the 60s and 70s. Really wide ties and bow ties and a lot and big bow ties. And some of these things were kind of whimsical. And people would wear them for whatever reason. And they still work with a tuxedo. And then I think it was in the 80s or 90s when bow ties just became, forget it. Nobody in their right mind is going to wear a bow tie. Actually, right now in this day and age, nobody wears ties, especially in the California, Silicon Valley. No, you don't wear a tie unless you're an a-hole.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I have a collection of ties, so I kind of know about this stuff. But I don't wear a tie either, because it's like nobody wears a tie. Nobody. So
it's a pretty stupid instrument to be hanging a piece of silk on your
neck.
It's
like women who wear scarves. It's not that outrageous. Whatever the case, the bow tie is, because it's like a bow. You're wearing a bow like you're a gift or a present or something, gift to mankind. And it's been so out of style for so long. I mean, it could come back in style, of course, but right now it's not. That anyone who wears one is very suspect, and it does become their image. And so it's a really, I think it's kind of a handicap.
I'm just saying that once you start with the bow tie, you can't not do the bow tie.
Yeah.
It's handlebar mustache concept. It all goes,
same thing.
You know, it's
handlebar mustache and a bow tie, you're stuck with both.
You know, hat.
Hat.
You know, guy that,
a lot of hipsters wear pork pie hats.
Yeah, you got to wear the hat. You know, it's those kind of things that, you know, you just can't not do. It becomes part of your persona. But anyway, Jim Rogers, who does in fact wear a bow tie, and he's wrote a book called something like Money Manager on a Motorcycle or something like that or something. He took a motorcycle around the world with his wife, I guess. Anyway, he is a big guy into this whole idea of, you know, agriculture. You want to have agriculture and farm, and you want to make sure you have things like many of the Chinese and Asian companies in your portfolio because, you know, that is the up-and-coming area. And more importantly, everyone should learn Mandarin. Seriously.
Yeah, well.
So he actually mentioned a stock, which, funny enough, I personally owned for a few days.
Why?
Because I like the symbol.
F you. Well, that's a stock picker's tip.
Yeah, I like that. You just like the symbol, you know? No, really. What it was is the stock is a real mover, and it did a big spike, and it came right back down to support. And, you know, even though it was wide and loose and crazy, it's not like I put a lot of money into this. It was just a whimsical, aggressive move. It actually, though, it came down about 15% when I first had it first couple of days. Then this article comes out. This is a funny thing. The article comes out, and he mentioned – it was like – I don't think it was a big mention. It went up like 50% in the last 2 days.
Hmm.
Crazy.
Are you still in?
Yeah. I took up most of my position at about the high – very close to the high today, and then it came down. It was up about 10%, and then it ended up down 13% for the day.
Huh.
And I got it probably up 8%. I picked out most of it.
That's good.
I have a small position left. But the point I'm making is this is – here's the point I was making really about this is that it goes back to what we were talking about Yahoo a moment ago and Intel. It's that there's a lot of scared money and very fast money in this market, where any kind of move in one direction just catches and the momentum moves very, very quickly. You saw that last week when on Thursday, markets coming down for a while, and all of a sudden Thursday, like wham, the markets went up because everybody's thinking there would be some kind of a deal done. And more interesting is it hasn't unwound yet with no deal done. There's still a lot of hope out there and a lot of optimism. Even though we saw earnings get a little bit cooler and some of our economic numbers, we saw the manufacturing number out of the Empire area, the Northeast, was very soft today. And we saw that the ISM service index was soft, which is a big issue because that is really related directly to the consumer who really takes most of the – spends more money on services than they do on, let's say, materials. And they make up about 70% of our economy. And as that number has started to all of a sudden move down and significantly, you know, the market should have reacted, and it really didn't. But more interesting, I think, is this whole materials thing.
Yeah, you've got this on this list here. This is interesting to me, too.
Material stocks have been in the doghouse for a while.
Yeah.
With China announcing, I don't know, 6 months ago or so, maybe 5 months ago, that they were going to stop the stockpiling of materials.
Which right.
Told you they're
probably
going to
stop buying building ghost cities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have these huge cities they've built.
And they argue that they're not ghost cities, but if
yeah,
you look
there's
at
a
any...
few people that live there, but they're not. They're not, let's put it this way, they're not fully occupied.
Right.
You know, maybe 5% occupied, and the city's huge, like, you know, like a small Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And it's got an opera house and all this other stuff that's just essentially just collecting dust.
Right. Now, some of these material stocks have really been hurt. I mean, you had the coal companies that were really hurt due to the fact of natural gas pricing came down. And, of course, the current administration in the U.S. is very much into the whole ecology, the whole environmental and keeping it all green, and coal is not green. And then you have also the slowdown around the world. And so all these things really kind of played major havoc with the coal companies. Then you have the iron companies, and you have Freeport, which is a little bit different, but still a materials company that has done very well. You have Freeport in the game we play. And some of these companies are starting to all of a sudden perk up a little bit.
Yeah.
And in fact, I give you a chart there. You can click on that. This is the materials. It doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? It should work. Mine doesn't work.
Mine's not working either.
Type in where
no,
it goes to. Type in.
It came up.
It did?
Well, this chart didn't come up, but the site came up.
Type in XLY in the little blank there. The get quote. Let's see what happens.
XLY.
It's not working either.
Maybe the site's down. Maybe it's run by the government.
Yeah, I can't get anything. Oh, there we go. Okay, so I typed it in the top left there.
Oh, I typed
and
in the middle
and then
part.
Click the chart then after that. Top right chart. Trying to mix it up with a few different charts here. But if you notice this, what's interesting
consumer
is
consumer discrete select sector spider.
You know what? No, that's not the right one.
What is this spider?
That is the consumer discretionary. It should be.
How do you play that?
That's the consumer discretionary.
How do you play it?
What do you mean, how do you play it?
Why would you invest in it or short it?
Oh. Why can't I find this? What's happening here? Why would you invest it? It's an ETF.
Yeah, I know. I realize that. But what kind of – how does it work?
It basically is – it trades like a stock and it has
– No, I know how the ETF works. How does this one work? I mean, what makes it go up and what makes it go down?
The value of the underlying securities.
So there's a bunch of securities in this thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you look at the
it's
holdings.
Not like a VIX or something that's just crazy?
No. I don't know if they have. Let's see if they have. I'm just seeing if they have anything on here. If you go to either the iShares site or if you go to the. Here's a profile on the bottom left there. Let's see if that does it.
But what are we trying to do here?
Here it is. Here's what the holdings are. Comcast, Home Depot, Walt Disney. I'm trying to find the materials, and I don't know what my problem is. It's not clicking right. But I'm looking for the materials, which is go to XLB.
XLD?
B as in boy. And pick up a chart there. Any chart will do. And what I thought was really interesting here, this is a chart that I'm going back to May. You can go back a little further.
Material Select Sector Spider?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
$42.
As badly as these have been doing, look at that longer-term chart, like the year chart, for example. There's a series of lows that are higher, higher lows, and a nice uptrend if you can kind of look at that.
It's been going up like a crazy man.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a big deal. It went from this year,
November 12th of last year, $34 all the way up to 42 and a half.
But you're seeing a pattern right now where there's a nice little move to the downside, and it kind of came off from about 43 and a half down to about 41, about 6% or so. And then it turned around very nicely on some very good volume. It hit support. And I'm just saying that it's very interesting that all the stocks, and look at the profile on this one, many of the stocks that are inside of here, maybe the smaller ones are a problem, but these have been doing well. Freeport's one of the biggest positions, 6%. You have Ecolab, PPG, Air Products.
So you like this ETF?
Not so much this, but this was more of a proxy for the discussion of like a U.S. Steel, which is symbol X, or a Cliff. Look at the U.S. Steel, how it's done recently, which is really fascinating.
I'm always fascinated by U.S. Steel. I should have invested in it when I was a kid.
Yeah, look at the recent move today.
That's not bad.
Look at the move today. Huge amount of volume, and it was up 5.5% today.
Yep.
Tremendous. Look at that. Yeah. Total breakout.
I'm going to put it on my list.
Okay. I got Cliffs on my list. And if you look a little bit further, actually, if you look at a five-year chart on this thing, probably looks pretty it looks terrible. Look at the five-year chart, though, if you can. This is really interesting.
The X?
Yeah. It looks terrible on a five-year basis.
Let me take a look.
Back in 2010, it was as high as 70.
Yeah.
That's in 2010. Go back even further. Let's go back to 25-year. It was as high as 200 back in 2009.
Wow. Those days are over.
And look at it. If you look at the long-term chart on this, it's really not very much off its base right now. Hmm. You see that? You know, that 23 level?
Yeah, that's funny.
Or 20 level, right about 20. But if it pops up, it comes up, you got a big potential for a move if it can kind of clear this, what is this now, about this 28 area?
Yeah, I'll put it on my list. It's in.
Okay, it's in. You want to talk about the list?
Yeah, you might as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to put X here. It's buy. Okay, got that down. There was a question that somebody had, and they asked, somebody wrote me about Vertex Pharmaceuticals, that it was off the list and on the list. I don't remember that happening, but they said why that happened. It's not. It's right there. I'm not sure what happened. Maybe there was something with the way that Google was reporting it. I'm not sure. We're short on Vertex there. It's up about 1.6%. I think we were down about 5% at one point on that, but it then came back down again. But you were stopped out on, we talked about Acadia, and 93% gain on that when you calculate for the stop. And stopped out on Clean Fuels, which was a 4.2% gain overall. And then the only thing that's really hurting right now is the JGBD, which is the PowerShares Inverse Bond Fund for Japan. Molson Coors and the Pep Boys on the short for me. But otherwise, everything is cruising. You know, McGraw-Hill's up 44%. Corn's up 25%. Your RCM is up, 8.5% or so. Your Freeport's up 21%. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I got in early on that one.
Yeah, it's awesome. By the way, this is not an offer to buy or sell any security, and we are talking about this in a hypothetical sense that this is a game that we play each and every week, and of course, we don't recommend buying or selling any of the securities that we talk about without professional advice, and John, myself, or Horowitz Company clients may own the stocks, and that will be duly noted. That is the case.
Or in most cases, we won't own the stock. So another reason not to get involved. But, X would be good. I'm looking at the insider stuff. Not much going on. Somebody's one of the Yum restaurant guys.
Ah, yes. Yep. He bought a big piece, right? He bought it after they came out with horrible earnings.
Yeah. I don't know what he's thinking.
I think he's there to support the stock, saying, hey, we think things are getting better. You know, the whole confidence play.
Yeah, maybe, by
the
way, he's got a caller someplace else. Who knows? I just don't like that company.
Big problems in China. By the way, the other thing is that HomeAway is up 11% since we did the short on the 18th. And you know my thesis on that. It's still got to break down about below this 28 level to be really good. And then it could really start flushing down. One of the ones, I don't even want to talk about it. Einhorn came out with a commentary today that he added to his short position on Green Mountain. Green Mountain was $88 or $86 when they came out, after they came out with their earnings. It really ratcheted up. I'm like, what is another one of these? I don't see it. I don't see the numbers being good. I just don't see it.
You just hate Green Mountain.
Well, because there are a lot of competitors out there, and they're losing market share. And, you know, it's
Costco finally has, now you can get a Kirkwood. I believe it was Kirkwood. It could be somebody else's, but I think it was Kirkland.
Kirkland, yeah.
Little coffee, crappy little coffee thingies. You know, they go into those Keurigs and whatever.
Yep. The thing is that I've seen the numbers and they haven't looked great to me. And again, you have that Starbucks.
I'm always stunned by people who actually use those devices.
I've tried. They make terrible coffee, in my opinion. But I'm a coffee snob. I don't drink Starbucks either.
No, I agree with you. I don't like Starbucks at all. It's usually burnt. Yeah. Yep. And I've had coffee from these devices. I think it's functional. If you actually have to have coffee and you don't have the time to do anything and you don't like instant, generally speaking, if you get a good instant from Europe or Mexico, it's better than this stuff. But
yeah, I find it to be very weak, and I don't really see how a quick flush through coffee can actually give you the full body flavor.
There's not enough brewing time, right.
Yeah, exactly. And so anyway, the company came out with their earnings, and it looked pretty negative to me, but yet the stock went up and it went up. And then it just turned around and it's been on a nosedive for the last few weeks. Hmm. Down to the 60s again. Hmm. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that after earnings come out. There's a lot of anticipation. There's a lot of thought that, you know, a miracle is going to be pulled out of a hat again. But I just can't imagine, even though we've seen a lot of the estimates being reduced down, I just don't see another miracle coming out of this, especially with all the stuff that's been going on, and with China slowing down, and with Europe not getting much better, and with the Latin America having problems of their own. I just don't see it.
I don't think
it's going to be a crash, but I just don't see any major movement unless it's all about the pumping of the money into the markets by the Fed. Well, then there you go. Then you have it.
Well, I think that should stabilize things. It shouldn't make the market go up. Because at some point, it's like you were moaning about earlier about the taxes, which is you can't do it forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it made the market go up and you were doing it, if it makes the market stable, that's one thing because the crash is a soft landing. But if it made the thing skyrocket, like all of a sudden the Dow is at 25,000 because of money pumping, that wouldn't be good.
Yep. Hey, I forgot to mention, you're really taking it to the mat here with this World Wrestling Entertainment up 7.5%. That's really smacking them down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think I've got a chokehold on that stock.
You got a good hold on it. I think so. Yeah. It's not a sleeper. Not a sleeper hold. Not at all. Great stuff. Good stuff. And Berkshire Hathaway is just kind of cruising along. Did you see the story that I think one of the Berkshire Hathaway? What was the story on that? That it was some kind of a. Hey, let's see. It looked very embarrassing to Mr. Buffett. Let's see what the news says here. Buffett turns to dispute. News. Something about one of the people. I guess he was.
Wasn't this
up on
old
charges.
News? There was some guy doing some insider hanky panky.
I think there was hanky panky, but it wasn't insider. No.
Okay.
It was something like rape or something, or it was.
Oh no! I didn't hear this.
You know, can you imagine Berkshire Hathaway rape doesn't come up with anything? Nothing.
He's got his.
How is that?
He owns
Zero.
The media.
You know, it's on the news. Maybe it's in the web. Yeah, Jason Lee indicted rape charges, Bloomberg, rape protesting. It was something about legal. Maybe it was something about legal. Something happened. Hmm. Criminal. There's some insider trading policy there. Okay, fine. No, that's not it. No, I have no idea. I have no idea. But anyway, there was something that went on in the news that's going on. I'll tell you one other thing about the news and what really irked me the last few days. It was the constant and never-ending trying to pump the markets up by CNBC. Because I have this little app and it kind of spits out some news sometimes from CNBC. Every single time there was a commentary about a roadblock in the negotiations and that, you know, somebody walked away from the table or something like that, CNBC, like 10 minutes later, would say, well, that's not really what happened. They're taking a break. This happened like 3 times in the last 2 days.
Huh.
What are they
They're going back to their old ways. Well, you know, they have ratings issues.
They're terrible.
And it's possible that somebody – and they've lost a lot of producers and everyone I know that's over there, they're not there anymore. That's why I don't get on. And the ratings. So they look at the ratings and say, this is terrible. We're getting beat up by Fox and other outlets. So what can we do? I have an idea. Let's go back to our old ways. Mm-hmm. Maybe people were watching us back in the day, you know, by the thousands, because we were always positive. We had a positive attitude, and that's what people want. So let's go back to that. Is that? I think that's reasonable.
That could be. I mean, they used to be all about the silver lining. There was a few people there that, you know, no matter what the news was, you know, if there was a million jobs lost, well, it could have been worse. And you know what? It's you know, that's a million jobs. It'll be hired eventually one day. So, you know,
they had a very, very positive attitude. And I was told by a number of people way back in the day, before the 2000 crash, that if you say anything, because this one guy was a big trader out here, and this is like talking to him about something. He says, I got kicked off of CNBC. Because you say one bad thing about the market, the potential for it crashing, and they just will not invite you back.
Well, the lineup this week with Leon Cooperman and David Tepper, I am certain, I tweeted this actually, I am certain that in the next few days, and I don't know this for a fact and I haven't looked, actually I wonder if that's, we can find that, but that Jeremy Siegel, who is, you know, the markets at, you know, $50 billion, whatever it is, that he wrote the book Stocks in the Long Run. He's, I believe, a Harvard or a Wharton professor, Wharton, I think. And he's constantly talking about how the market's going to go up, which can't argue that he was right. But he said, you know, I didn't see the 2008 situation occurring. Well, what do you mean you didn't see it? It was right in front of your eyes. How can you not see that? It was there a year and a half in the making before it actually occurred. And it didn't seem possible, and who knows if you could have really quantified the depth of it, but it was clear as anything I could imagine.
Yeah,
CNBC schedule. Let's see, schedule of guests. Because what happens is that when the markets get a little ugly and all, they bring on certain people, you know, and it's, this is 2011, that can't be right. Let's see, video shows, watch live, full episodes, watch live pro, news, investing, series video, latest videos, you know, nope, shows, watch live, CNBC US, see what that does, I don't know if it's a click, come on, man, they redo these sites and they're terrible, a lot more drop down things, and all right, schedule, let's see what the schedule says, okay, so it usually be on Squawk Box in the morning, this is Monday the 14th. So we're talking about, let's see, Wednesday would be the case, right? So that would be 9 a.m., Squawk on the Street, and Squawk Box. Let's see, Squawk Box. Starbucks, let's see, Friday, October. No. Why do they have this stuff on here? Ugh, this is stupid. What's the point of clicking on something if they don't have any information about it?
All right,
they have,
enough.
Old stuff. Anyway. But I bet you it would happen. Anybody, keep a watch on that. Well, maybe don't watch it, but if it does, I'll let you know. I'll figure out if he comes on or not. But anyway, that's all I have for tonight.
That's all I got, too.
Okay, well, we'll be around next week for some more exciting, you know, grousing and some more fun.
Yeah, and maybe the economy, maybe the whole world will have come to an end by then because of this debt crisis.
We still going to do a podcast if it does?
Yeah, of course.
We're going to go to the bunker.
Yeah, you just have to, you know, have a gun at the ready.
Yeah, we have the DH bunker that we've built actually just for this kind of situation. And we will actually be simulcasting on AM radio. So you should probably go get one of those radios that have
the
charger.
The crank.
Yeah, the crank. Yeah, exactly. Get that. We'll be there. And we'll be, you know, anything you need. We have a whole plan ready.
Yeah.
In the event of the end
of
the world.
Don't forget, you can always use the water in your water heater to drink.
Oh, really? That's and you get, what about your urine?
Just piss in the backyard. Who cares?
No, I meant drink your urine.
Oh, no. I'm not doing that.
Not doing it.
Not going
to happen. Do you think you could go to extreme measures if you had to?
There are clarification devices. You could probably actually process your urine and get pretty good water out of it, I'm guessing.
If you're stuck in a mountain and your leg is trapped and you can't get out and there's nobody for I don't know how long, would you do the old
would
cutting
I eat
of the,
my leg of the, off so I could yeah. get moving?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Really?
I don't expect this scenario to occur.
No? Low probability?
Very low probability.
Right. I mean, the worst thing that can happen is you get, I don't know, stuck in your room or something.
The door's locked. Yeah. I'm producing. All right.
I'll see you next week.
Next Tuesday. Bye.
Right, bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.